All right, this is Talk is Cheap. I'm your host, DJ Susti, on KEPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks Independent Community Radio, also simulcast on KEPW.org. All right, the next few weeks probably is going to be the Public Interest Environmental Law Conference was on, has been done virtually this year for 2021, back in March, and they've just now put them all on YouTube, so I don't have to use the Zuckerberg, the world of Zuckerberg, to get them, and because I stay out of the world of Zuckerberg. And so this week is our own Will Falk and Michelle. First, it's Michelle Holman of KelDef talking about the rights of nature and the limited success that they've had with the rights of nature issue, because nature, of course, should have rights. So this week it's Michelle Holman and one other speaker, and next week is our own local Will Falk. So thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Support independent media.
Michelle Holman has lived in Western Lane County's Coast Range for more than 30 years and has been active in the anti-herbicide struggle since the late 1970s. After many years of her community's unsuccessful fight to stop government-protected aerial spraying of toxic chemicals by private logging companies, she renounced traditional activism and joined the community rights movement. She is a founder of Community Rights Lane County and the Oregon Community Rights Network. She has served on the Mapleton School Board for 25 years, where more than 20 years ago, the school district stopped using toxic chemicals on school grounds.
We're going to start with a video, I think. Go for it there, Marky.
Thinking that I'd moved out to a paradise, finding out that in paradise, some really crazy stuff goes on, like aerial spraying of herbicides from helicopters. I mean, I'm one of those early Vietnam era activists. That's where I got my training wheels in activism. And it didn't matter who we went to, they all said the same thing. Practice, you're a little bit of an alarmist. It's all that tact for, I don't know, 35 years. One weekend, Richie went to a community rights workshop and said, hey, Michelle, you know, you got to check this out.
And there's something new afoot. This could be a direction for our need to be part of it.
It makes no sense to be playing in a sandbox where I have no say over the rules. These rules have been ensconced in law. The system is rigged in favor of corporations over people. And in order for us to counter an unjust law, we have to create a just law.
I think democracy stands as the single greatest obstacle to corporate hegemony.
You know, you can't look to the left or the right and hope somebody's gonna be a part of this and save us. It's me, it's us. And we, where we live, should have a say over our destiny.
I think it's the antidote to our problems, to be able to live without exploitation, make sure that every individual is part of the whole.
It's reality that we have to make changes, and that if we don't stand up to what I like to call the f***ery, then we're complicit.
I don't think we have ever truly practiced democracy, but I do believe that it's the only way for us to survive in a cooperative fashion.
in Lane County, you know, we in this work, we're being stopped by the legal system, by our own elected officials. And so we take these losses as opportunities to shine light on what's wrong here. I mean, I'm more resolute now than I was at the beginning when I thought, hey, we're going to write a law and then we're going to pass it and then they're going to stop spraying. And at this point, 7 years into this work, I'm more clear that this work is the right work.
We at this point might as well be willing to live and die for them. As long as it includes all people and includes a healthy planet.
We think democracy is a good idea. It's never been actually tried here, and we should try it. So in order to create a democracy, the people have to be decision makers.
It's tough to make that crossover where you can begin believing that it's within our will to make dramatic changes.
Sometimes people have to hear it over and over and over until, you know, they finally say, whoa, you know, Richie and Michelle might be onto something. Maybe we should check out what they're doing.
First, we have to go through this cultural change, which is a huge transformation. And our lawmaking that we're attempting these days is hopefully an introduction and hopefully inroads into the concept of a new type of economy and a new type of social structure based on something that we've never truly experienced.
For me, building this movement is just, it's a natural response to injustice.
The kind of consideration, regard for our fellow human beings on our planet will guide our economic system, will create its own economic system.
Until the wrongs are righted, I'm in. It's a fight, and I feel like a warrior doing the right kind of battle.
All we have to do is exercise what already exists as our right in thwarting whatever kind of threats to our peace, safety, and happiness that could arise.
Just by the fact that we don't give up, we inspire others to action.
Yep, that's my home for the last 40 years. I grew up in Southern Oregon, and I actually went to UO in the 70s, and I thought I was going to go to law school. But I met my life partner, and I left city living, and I moved to the Central Coast Range in Deadwood. And that's where I learned about aerial herbicide spraying. Crazy practice. A local anti-herbicide warrior, Carol Van Strum, to whom, by the way, PILC awarded the David Brower Lifetime Achievement Award to in 2018, well-deserved. She and the Five Rivers activists inspired us here in Deadwood. And those efforts eventually stopped clear-cutting and herbicide spraying in the federal forests. But clear-cutting and aerial spraying is still legal on Oregon's private forested lands, which is approximately half of Oregon's forested lands. Meaning that there's plenty of spraying still going on. And while Agent Orange was outlawed, I believe in 1971, it's been replaced by a vast array of other hazardous chemicals. And to this day, lots of people still don't even realize that spraying occurs with regularity in our private forests. Eugene residents, you get your water from up the McKenzie. That's home to large tracts of industrial timberlands, well sprayed every year. And this year, due to last year's fires, the McKenzie is the scene of unparalleled salvage logging with much more spraying to come. So this is not just a rural issue, it's your issue as well. So back to the 70s, we in Deadwood organized, even before we experienced multitude of health impacts from stillbirths to miscarriages to brain cancers to nervous system disorders. Before those occurred, we organized because we didn't trust officials when they told us the chemicals were safe, and we were right. check out the film, The People versus Agent Orange. You can go to communityrightslanecounty.org website. This amazing film details the story of two very courageous women, Carol Van Strum, who I mentioned, from Oregon, and Tran Tho Nha from Vietnam, who have been fighting at great personal cost to stop the use of toxic chemicals and to hold the chemical industry accountable for the 40-year cover-up of Agent Orange. This really is a must-see film for all, especially if you live in Oregon. And it started virtual screening on Thursday the 5th, but it runs through the 18th. So go to our website and see how you can watch it. So yeah, in the 70s, we organized, we fought, we wrote letters, we called and met with elected officials, government agency officials. We met with corporate folks at their offices. They came to us here in Deadwood. We demonstrated at corporate headquarters. You know, we did it all. And still the spraying continues. And why is that? Well, as they all told us, it's legal. The law protects the spraying practice over the health of residents and all life forms. This quote from one of our most inspiring community rights mothers, Gail Darrell from Barnstead, New Hampshire, this quote moves me. If the state permits corporations to operate in your town and does not protect you from the harms they cause, you don't live in a democracy, you live in a resource colony. The system is designed to protect big corporations. The system is not broken. It's fixed, and we have to break it. Laws benefit those who write them, corporate lawyers on behalf of greedy corporate heads and their beneficiaries. Our country was founded on the principle that people are sovereign, that the people have the inherent power. And that's that we tell the government how to run our country. So here's a little piece out of our own Oregon Constitution. Article 1, Section 1 declares, we declare that all people, when they form a social compact, are equal in right, that all power is inherent in the people, and all free governments are founded on their authority and instituted for their peace, safety, and happiness, and they have at all times a right to alter, reform, or abolish the government in such manner as they may think proper. That's actually in every state's constitution. And I went to school in Oregon. I never heard that. I never was taught that. I found out about that when I was introduced to community rights. We do not live in a democracy. It's more like a corporatocracy. Democracy occurs when people are the decision makers, and clearly that's just not the case. The founding fathers really only paid lip service to democratic principles. You know, the hierarchy, the way it's supposed to look, is that the people are at the top because we have, we are sovereign. The power is inherent in the people at the top. Then we elect governments to carry out the business of running this country. One of the tasks that we entrusted to our government was to charter corporations. And at the beginning, this was for a limited time, for a discrete purpose, and to benefit the people. That's how corporations were set up. It's been flipped. The corporations are at the top. They write the laws. They have unlimited time to conduct their business. It doesn't have to benefit the people. It doesn't have to be one discrete reason. And they send those laws to government. Government enforces them. And now we're at the bottom of the hierarchy. We are the consumers. That's what we do. That's what we're supposed to do. So this really isn't working out for us. And, you know, when we say stop spraying us, they say it's legal. So, you know, the answers to our problems, they just don't lie in this system, because the system doesn't care about us. The government corporate alliance reigns supreme. Corporate profits over planet, people, and all natural creation. Our minds have been colonized, just as the land has been colonized. we live within a legal framework that considers corporations to be persons and Mother Earth to be property. These are legal doctrines. There are legal doctrines that support these notions and create obstacles to those of us who seek to protect the places we love. And Marky's going to talk about those a little bit later. But the biggest obstacle we face is our own self-doubt. We just don't think we're smart enough, we empowered enough, or that we have the fortitude to battle the massive corrupt system. We literally don't believe that we have the ability or the right to govern. But self-doubt didn't get women the right to vote, nor in chattel slavery. And we have the obligation to fight for justice in the face of mounting corporate privilege and destruction. And that fight lies in the power of the people, because we just can't count on government who colludes with corporate interests. So here in Lane County, since we couldn't find advocacy within our government, we became our own advocates and decided to try the ballot box, because in Oregon, we have the initiative system. This is how the people legislate. We would write a law with the help of CELDEF, this Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, brilliant people there, based on our right to protect our communities. That's what the law would do. It would protect our communities, and we would let the people decide about aerial spraying. This is literally civil disobedience through lawmaking. We knew that it was legal what they were doing. We just didn't think it was just. So Community Rights Lane County was born in October of 2012. By 2014, we'd written the spray ban law. We filed it, and a separate right to local community self-government initiative, which gives us the right to write and pass laws like the spray ban. We wrote them as charter amendments, because charter amendments have a higher level of protection and they would be more difficult to overturn by the county commissioners than an ordinance or a straight initiative. So we took 2 years, gathered 30,000 signatures. It was tireless work with a bunch of really great in the streets, kind of committed, dedicated, beautiful citizens. Our charter amendments were challenged in court by timber interests numerous times. Yeah, we were in court a lot. Timber industry has effectively kept our measures off the ballot. Then we tried a new tact. And so for months, we attended county commissioners meetings in an effort to have the commissioners, the county's public health stewards, mind you, refer our spray ban measure to the ballot. Not to support the measure. We didn't ask them to support it. We didn't ask them just to pass it, which they could have done, but just to refer it to the voters. But they lacked the courage to stand with the people. So after our local courts sided with timber multiple times, we have appealed to the State Court of Appeals and are currently waiting for a judge to render a decision on whether or not we can get to the ballot box. We will not rest until we get our measures on the ballot for the people to decide. And regardless of the decision, we will not rest until the unjust practice of aerial spraying is banned. Meanwhile, at the state level, guided by the Oregon Community Rights Network, along with other community rights chapters, we've embarked on an effort to amend our state constitution with a right to local community self-government amendment. And as it stands now, Oregonians are hamstrung, unable to protect ourselves from all manner of harmful corporate activity because of state preemption, which gives authority to the state to decide what laws the people at the local level can adopt. State preemption can affect anything from environmental regulation to firearm use to labor laws. One good example is, say, the county or the city of Eugene wanted to raise the minimum wage. We are preempted from doing so. So the right to local community self-government law eliminates state preemption. We'll decide what we want to do, right? We're the people, we're sovereign. From a community rights perspective, the rights of nature must be legally recognized and protected by law. This perception of nature only as extractive property denies nature's right to exist, persist, and flourish naturally. The system that neglects the rights of nature is not going to fix itself. It's up to us. A corporations have more legal protections to create harm in our communities and to nature herself than we have to protect our health and the health of our ecosystems. So we really have to change this. I want to mention that along with rights of nature, community rights applies to a broad range of rights, including but not limited to environmental rights, the right to clean air, water, and soil, worker rights, the right to living wages and equal pay for equal work, democratic rights, such as the right to safe communities, free from police overreach and violence, the right to free and fair elections, the right of local community self-government. Social, economic, racial, and environmental injustice has grown during this global pandemic. And yes, we need to change the laws that privilege harmful corporate activity, but we have to understand that in order to accomplish that, we need a cultural shift and understanding that really it's only by the grace of the living earth that we live, that the extractive consumerist gerbil wheel we all run on is unsustainable. There's a growing recognition globally that we must fundamentally change the relationship between humans and nature. A cultural shift that would acknowledge that humans aren't separate from nature, that we are nature. And through the legal recognition of rights of nature, our system of laws would reflect the highest values. Just imagine if we respected nature's rights and embraced an indigenous traditional ecological knowledge that the earth doesn't belong to us, that we belong to the earth. If at the core of our relating to the earth, we treated her well, we might just get along better with one another, be more respectful, regardless of our differences. So, you know, it's really more important and relevant than ever that we empower local dialogue and authorize local lawmaking, because we can't count on our government. If we don't assert community rights, communities will continue to become sacrifice zones to corporate greed. We have a moral responsibility to protect the places we live and love. And so let's strive for social, economic, racial, environmental justice, because there simply is no justice when our government and our laws embolden corporations to put profits over people and the planet. This legal avenue is one strategy, but as long as laws protect greed-driven corporate activities, we have to challenge and replace them. Coupled with other strategies, like what you'll hear from Will Falk, the battle for sanity continues. There is the rub between the urgency we hear from the natural world and the long-term work we have when laws reflect what matters to justice seekers. But the earth is demanding that we all find our place defending our planet. And, you know, we invite you to join us. We need to get more people understanding that we all have a role to play. Whatever tactics are employed, we do this work because we love our Mother Earth home, all creation, and one another. And together, we must create a future. We, our children, and theirs deserve. That's our moral obligation and our honor. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Kai.
Yeah, hi. Thank you. Thank you so much, Michelle, for
Kai Sanborn is representing Community Rights San Juan Islands, an organization dedicated to advancement of rights of nature concepts to the recognition of the rights of nature Salish Sea. Kai is also on the board of the Islands Oil Spill Association, a grassroots organization committed to the response and prevention of marine oil spills. And as a retired nurse, she has been actively involved in the county's COVID testing and vaccination programs.
Let me see. Yeah, hi. Thank you. Thank you so much, Michelle, for your passion and the width and breadth of what you shared. And I just want to acknowledge that I'm really honored to be here with Marky and Michelle and Will. I'm kind of probably the newbie in the group. And I want to also appreciate that the conference was organized. I'm also humbled to be part of a law conference, given I have no background in that area. But my name is Kai Sanborn, and I'm speaking to you from Lopez Island in the San Juans up in Washington. And I first want to start off by acknowledging that I reside on ancestral lands and waters of the Coast Salish people who have called this place home since time immemorial. And I'm committed to honoring the inherent Aboriginal and treaty rights that have been passed down from generation to generation. And on a personal note, it's been a real privilege to live in this place and to raise my daughters and to call these beautiful islands home. Our group, Community Rights San Juan Islands, came together a little over 3 years ago. We were not organizing against one particular threat. There was no aerial spraying, nor were we organizing in response to a specific harm. We came together on our small island in our small county in the heart of the Salish Sea out of concern for the many threats to the region. And just briefly, for those of you who aren't familiar with the Salish Sea, it's a somewhat recent official designation in 2009 that describes the inland waters from South Puget Sound in Washington on up into Canada, through the Straits of Georgia between BC and Vancouver Island, then out to the Straits of Juan de Fuca to the Pacific. And it does include the watershed of the region. This region has seen a proliferation of fossil fuel projects, each one adding to the risk of oil spills as ships and tankers transit these narrow international waterways. At the time that we began, there were 13 to 14 fossil fuel infrastructure projects proposed, which would have really posed a significant threat. We are acutely aware also of the vulnerability of the southern resident orca, and we grieve each death and celebrate each birth. And on a high note, there have been 3 celebrations this year, so that's a bright spot. There is the decline of salmon runs, so important to the region and truly the cultural heart of the Coast Salish peoples. Growth and development pressures add to ecological stressors and impacts as farmland and forests are converted to development. And as we all know, there's climate change bearing down on us, which has brought warming waters, drier summers, and the smoke of distant fires. And locally, we witness sea level rise as it eats away shoreline roadways. So we've had 50 years worth of Earth Days, 50 years of the EPA, and yet the losses seem to be compounding. The power of corporations grows, as Michelle illustrated, and has often seems to have merged with government, such that communities find themselves on the wrong side of the law when we try to protect their water, air, and land, and a livable future for their children and beyond. Our Earth is in trouble, and so are we, and something needs to really change. So enter the rights of nature. Rights of nature begins with a simple but radical assertion that nature and natural entities have the right to survive, thrive, and regenerate their vital life cycles. And it establishes a legal framework to defend those rights. It challenges the notion that nature is merely property under the law, a trove of resources for human use and abuse. And it values the integrity of the whole, while its enforcements include restoration of what's been harmed. Our group met with CELDEF. You're going to hear a lot about CELDEF through this talk, Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund organizers 3 years ago, and we were introduced to the Rights of Nature movement and the Community Rights movement. These concepts and the work of CELDEF aligned with our beliefs and addressed our concerns. So we jumped on board, and working with CELDEF, we drafted a Rights of the Salish Sea initiative and aimed for the 2019 ballot. We were sort of flush with naivete. In somewhat of a strange paradox, people like the idea of rights of nature and responded to the idea of the rights of the Salish Sea. But lacking an imminent and county-based threat, it was hard to gather the support we need. There was not an emergency that needed a quick response. So it was harder. People asked more in-depth questions and had more, there had more concerns that may not have risen to the fore in the presence of, say, a Frackwell proposed in the middle of our island. We'd written the law broadly with the specifics about the law figuring those would kind of take shape as the law was used. What we saw as a proactive good just left too many open questions. Another factor that at the time was that we really recognized the critical role of the Coast Salish tribes in Salish Sea stewardship and sea rights of nature really as being born out of indigenous ways of thinking. So we decided we really need to slow down so that we might build relationships in support of our common goals, and that is a work in progress. So we've turned to the slow work of making a cultural shift through education and outreach, and here's what we've been doing toward that end. We've held conversation cafes to explore ideas, and pre-COVID we stood at endless Saturday markets and talked to people. We've hosted Coast Salish Sea dances, or Salish Sea dances, because activism's fun. And it's even more fun than when you get to dance. I actually think revolutions need a soundtrack. Currently, we're involved in a research project led by Dr. Robin Reed of Colorado State University, aimed at understanding people's relationship to this place, what they're concerned about, and their response to rights of nature and rights of the Salish Sea concepts. And through we've been doing this through in-depth interviews that have been pretty revelatory. What we found is that listening is an amazing kind of advocacy. When you actually ask people questions, you get a very different response when we often are trying to tell people what to think. So we have found that people share concerns about this place. They are deeply alarmed by what they see as a loss of salmon, regardless of political place where they are on the political spectrum. And through the conversational process, these are in-depth interviews, people come around to recognize something that they might not have understood at the beginning of the interview. Those interviews will be collated by some of Robin's students, and those students are also working on a survey of rights of nature initiatives globally. So that's been a great alliance for us. In the fall, we held a virtual conversation with state legislatures, scientists, and community leaders regarding protections of the Salish Sea. And currently we're working with the San Juan County's comprehensive plan, specifically by promoting language for the county's vision statement that reflects rights of nature thinking. Nature is a living system rather than as a merely an aesthetic or economic value. And replacing outdated notions of rugged individualism with mutual dependence and interconnection as humans and with our ecosystem partners, something that COVID's made particularly clear. We're also in preliminary discussions about putting a Bill of Rights in our county's Home Rule Charter, and that's an ongoing work. So as a nurse, I tend to see things through the metaphor of the body. And here, it's Mother Earth on the gurney. So the ortho doc comes in and assesses her femur fracture. He's confident that that bone will heal with rest. The blood bank is running low, so the technician takes an extra liter. The physical therapist demands that the patient get up and moving while the surgeon sees no problem with removing so many feet from that patient's colon. Meanwhile, the oncologist is titrating the maximum amount of chemo that's safe to administer. And the nephrologist has assumed permission to remove a kidney and is ecstatic to be able to deliver that kidney to someone else. Meanwhile, the lab guy comes in with blood test results from yesterday that indicate the patient is just doing fine. You get the picture. The patient in this metaphor, our Mother Earth, is getting sicker. And I just want to reassure you that a nurse would never let that happen. But it's essentially what's happening to our planet as threats and assaults on ecosystems are viewed in singular rather than how they affect the whole. The patient, anyway, I was just going to add that maybe the Earth needs a really good nurse along with some good lawyers. Anyway. The patient on the table, planet Earth, is also us. We are not separate, and our health and our well-being are intertwined. So in a paper published in 2015 about the synergy of multiple threats to the Salish Sea, Joe Gatos of the Sea Doc Society, located here in the San Juans, made a case for collaboration in evaluating impacts at the ecosystem level, regardless of the border. He writes, Failure to address multiple impacts will affect the Coast Salish and the 7 million other people that also depend on this ecosystem. Despite this, there is no legal mandate or mechanism requiring a comprehensive review of the potential threats and cumulative impacts of these multiple energy-related development activities throughout the Salish Sea. Our group, Community Rights Samoan Islands, believes that the rights of nature offer such a pathway to address the health of the whole against the impacts of 1,000 cuts, and that recognition of the rights of the Salish Sea could unite the various environmental efforts around the region. We see our work as a potential catalyst for that movement to grow across the Salish Sea and beyond. So our rights of nature laws working. Not always, and perhaps not often, but sometimes. In 2008, Ecuador enshrined rights of nature in its constitution. 3 years later, the rights of the Vilcabamba River were upheld against the damages of a road project, and restoration of the river was required. Just last month, residents of the third largest city in Ecuador voted overwhelmingly to permanently ban mining in 5 watershed areas. To be clear, this is a big win, but already pushback is happening from those multinational mining interests. We're going to hear more about the Lake Erie Bill of Rights from Marky Miller. And around the globe, there are rights of nature efforts that are taking place. But it's a long haul process. The opposition is well moneyed and they are accustomed to power. And courts and communities are having to learn as they go. But what we believe is that rights of nature forces us to ask the right questions. Does nature have the right to survive? Does nature have the right to thrive and regenerate her vital life cycles? Does the Salish Sea have the right to survive, to thrive and evolve? How we answer these questions says a lot about us and our future. If the answer is no, I would ask why not? And further, what does that say about our ability to survive and who we are as a species? If the answer is yes, then our responsibilities become clear. We need to create rights of nature laws, we need to get them on the books, and then we need to go out and defend them. Thank you. Marky, you're up.
Thanks, Kai. Let's get my screen share going. Okay.
Dawn of life lying between the silence and soul sources, chased amid fusions of wonder, in moments hardly seen forgotten, colored in pastures of chance dancing, these cast spells of challenge, amused but real in thought, we bled from the sea. Oh, dawn of thought transferred through moments of days and the searching of revealing corridors of time, provoking memories disjointed but with purpose, craving penetrations of the links to the self-instructor's sharp and tender love as we took to the air a picture of distance. Dawn of our power descending as fast as misused expression, as only to teach the best to reveal passion, chasing latent corners, and we dance from the ocean. Dawn of love sent within us, colors of awakening among the many, what to follow, only tunes of a different age, as the links span our endless caress. Life everlasting.
Over hanging trees, let them rent the forest.
And hope and chase and love for you and you and you.